Breathing Radio, this is Chiara Nicoletti from the 66th Berlinale, and today I'm with Doris Torry, director of Fukushima Mon Amour, screening here in Panorama. So how much and how was this film different from Hanami, for example, that was also set in Japan?
Personally, yeah, and this one is a worldwide tragedy. Yeah. The three catastrophes of Fukushima, which we tend to forget, it was the tsunami, the earthquake. No, other way around. First the earthquake, then the tsunami, and then the nuclear plant accident within 20 minutes. Three catastrophes in 20 minutes. And I went to Fukushima in November of 2011, mm-hmm. 6 months after the catastrophe, because I really wanted to see for myself what this meant. Mm-hmm. And I went into the zone, and back then the radiation was very high still. And I was pretty blown away by it. It was very shocking. And then, you know, very slowly I started writing about it, and I didn't really know what I wanted to write about it or do about it. And then I went to visit the people in the temporary housings back then even, and they were so convinced that they would move out of those temporary housings very soon. 5 years later, still the same. And meanwhile, a lot of the men have died or committed suicide, or they're drinking or gambling. And the women are the ones who are far more resilient. And those are the women who you see. And everything in this film is real. It's the real housing, the real women, the real zone, the real house where people escaped and the neighbors drowned, also the real thing. The owners of the house where we shot, they survived, but barely. So everything is for real. And in my first talks, not interviews, conversations with these old women, the character of Satomi evolved. And then I had to find my German perspective, which I always need to talk about another country. I need my German perspective because I cannot pretend that I'm Japanese or Italian or Spanish or Polish. I can't. So that took some time to find Marie as a character.
What I liked about the film is that she's sometimes I ask myself, we ask ourselves, what we can do to help people, right? And she sort of finds her own way of helping someone, not the way that most people do in this case, the other volunteers, but...
Yes, I'm proud of Marie that she doesn't go back to Germany after her little clown stint, which is not working very well either. She's not a good clown. That she decides to stay on and help is something I find quite courageous. But of course, she also understands that helping, giving, also means that you're getting a lot, which is something that, for instance, the people here in Germany who are helping refugees, they understand this now, that helping means that you're getting a lot. And what do you get? You get connection. You get connection to the world, to other people, and the country is stay in an isolation and to become isolated if you don't stay on and if you don't help, if you don't communicate with somebody in need. You become very isolated and you become very fearful, which is also happening to a lot of people in Germany, but also in Europe. To say, no, 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 I don't want to help, means that you get very isolated. And in the long run, I think very lonesome.
There's a sort of tension between the way you shoot at home and outside, and as well as a cultural tension between West and East. So can you elaborate more on this?
That, of course, is very autobiographical. Marie is, to a great extent, me, always being the elephant in Japan, because as a tall woman from the West, you're bound to be the elephant, but also as a foreigner, because you cannot do everything right in Japan. Something is always wrong about how you act. Because Japan is very, very formalized and very, very ritualized. So my role as a foreigner is always to be the fool, because I cannot get it right, which is the traditional role of the foreigner in Japan. And Japanese also enjoy the foreigner as the fool to a certain extent. It's uplifting. It's funny. And here my question was, and again, it's an autobiographical experience, how much can the fool from the West, the elephant from the West, influence and maybe also save the Japanese? And here she really does. I mean, she saves her life because she's much more spontaneous, much more emotional. She saves her. She reacts. She does not, stay in a very formal place. She acts out. On the other hand, what she learns, what Marie learns, is something that I always try to learn from Japan, which is a great, mindfulness with the other. In Japan, people think about the other first, and then about themselves. You know, in a situation like this, I would constantly check, how are you doing? How are you doing? Are you okay? Mm-hmm. Are you okay? Watch your body language, and be very, very focused on your well-being, which is very nice, very sweet, and very tender. And on the contrary, we as Germans, but also maybe as Europeans, we mostly think about ourselves first. I want my coffee, and I don't care whether you have one. I have mine. So that is something that, yes, Marie learns, and I always learn from Japan.
I wanted to know why you used the figure, like the clown, and the metaphor. What's the metaphor behind it?
Well, I hate clowns. I don't like them. And many people I know don't like clowns because we all got scared as children of clowns or something. I don't know. Not many people like clowns. But here, the clowns for help, and in reality they're called Clowns Without Borders, I think they do a very, very important job. They go to disaster areas and they perform. And Moshe Cohen, here the clown Moshe, he is the founder of Clowns Without Borders in the United States. And he went to Fukushima also half a year after the catastrophe, or even shorter, to entertain the people there. And they do that in all kinds of catastrophe regions, whether it's earthquakes or war zones or wherever catastrophes are happening. The Clowns with our borders go and entertain the people. And then you can, of course, ask, well, what difference does it make? People laugh for about half an hour, and then they're being thrown back into their tragedies. And the Clowns with our borders say, well, but for at least 30 minutes, they could forget about their tragedy. They could laugh, which I think is a great, it's a great purpose. And in a way, I'm trying to do the same thing with my films, that even though this deals with a terrible catastrophe, the film has a certain lightness to it, a certain humor and lightness, where in the end you even find a little bit of consolation, something that is not feeling as heavy as at the very beginning. And that's always my goal, to make heavy, terrible things a bit lighter, to make the heavy lighter and not the contrary, to make something that's light heavy, which is a very German specialty. We are very good at that. Take something very easy and make it very difficult.
I wanted to know more about the use of black and white. It is because of the past, the memories, the tragedy, all of that they're carrying it. It's in the atmosphere.
Well, for one thing, the decision was quite easy to make because there is no color left in that region except for a very dirty light blue, because the sky is always grayish. It's not really blue because it's so humid. And then there's no green, nothing, because of the destroyed nature. It's all beige, which is not a very interesting color to me. And it's very, because of the humidity, it has no contrast. It's all very wishy-washy. But with black and white, you have a lot of contrast. And the story becomes very very stark and very clear, which I found necessary. And also, I think it becomes more universal in black and white and more beautiful. And the faces in black and white, they're just so beautiful. And there's, of course, the connection to the old Japanese films, also that. But the other reasons were more important than the connection to the Japanese films.
Why Fukushima Mon Amour? Is it an homage to René?
Well, because it's the approach is similar. A Western woman goes to Japan, she has her personal tragedy, and Japan has the terrible tragedy of the nuclear bomb. That's Hiroshima Mon Amour. And here it's the terrible disaster of Fukushima. And again, you know, a woman from the West goes to Japan with her own personal tragedy. That's, you know, on a very basic level, the connection. And for the Japanese, of course, the connection between Hiroshima and Fukushima is very evident because both times it's a nuclear disaster. And for a long time, the bombs of Nagasaki and Hiroshima were called the bad nuclear energy of the terrible experiences with radioactivity, but nuclear energy was called the green energy, the good radioactive energy. And now it turned out, no, it's just as, you know, just as horrible when something goes wrong.
Can you tell us something more about the Japanese actress Kaori Monoi? She's quite big in Japan, right?
Yeah, she's a big star. She's a big diva, but at the same time, she, and I was surprised because she is the Meryl Streep of Japan. She lived with us for weeks and weeks in a container together with the construction workers, you know, who were digging up the soil. There was nothing around us except for two brothels, a crematorium, and a little supermarket. That was it for weeks and weeks. And she did not wink once. I mean, she did not complain, not once. She was completely, well, maybe not at ease, but she did not complain, which I don't think you could do with a Hollywood star in that situation. And it was really hard because there was nothing, nothing, nothing.
Can you explain more the wonderful two scenes at the beginning and the end with the cat head?
Well, the way I shoot is quite different from a regular shoot because we're very small, very flexible. We don't have trailers, we don't have makeup, we don't have costume. Many things that a lot of my colleagues think are very important we don't have because I like to be flexible. And this is a perfect example for our flexibility. I read about the Catman during the shoot on the internet, and I contacted the Catman, and it turned out that he's an office worker, a salary man. He goes to the office from 9 to 5, and I asked him, you know, could you be the Catman in our film? And he said, well, no, because, you know, I have to work until 5 o'clock, and I only have half an hour, and then I have to take care of, I don't know, my mother or somebody. I only have 30 minutes. I said, fine, no problem. We are able to accommodate you. So he came, and with our little crew, it's possible, you know. With a normal crew, you wouldn't know where to park your cars or, you know, to have somebody for half an hour. Impossible. And he was such a gift, un regalo, for the entire story, because I had the cat story in the film. And to have him was a present.
Talking about cats, I really love the scene in which they're at her son's house, and she is talking about when her daughter was suffering from the fact that she was a geisha. So she gathered a cat, and the cat died. So she came up with this thing that the cat would reincarnate, and just she started to meow.
Yes.
So the whole thing, I want to know how you come up with this story and what's the metaphor in it?
Well, it's an old Japanese myth that animals can reincarnate in people. And I heard that story before about a dog being reincarnated in a person. And it's something that in Japan it can happen very easily because Japan is an animistic society. So, you know, everything has a soul, nature has a soul, animals have a soul, and the idea of reincarnation is, of course, a Buddhist idea. So these things are possible in Japan. They're not as easily possible in our world. But to the Japanese, it's not so strange. When you look at the films of Miyazaki, you know, famous Miyazaki, Hayao Miyazaki, there everything has a soul too. You know, there are a lot of things that become sentient beings. Even the little dust parts, remember, where the dust of coals starts to have a soul, and all kinds of things become sentient beings. So it's very Japanese. And to the Japanese, this is not so strange, the story. And to me, it was a perfect way to illustrate the relationship between daughter and mother. And that, Satomi is a difficult mother, a difficult person. Not so easy.
Also more creative than we expect. I mean, they both have rigidities, and they're flexible in a way, and at the same time, they're rigid in other ways. And that's how they help each other.
Yes.
Right, to change their attitude towards things.
Yes. Yeah. But I'm glad you mentioned that scene, because to me it's still so strange. And then the husband or the boyfriend, he plays Schubert on the piano, a German piece. And again, you know, this happened by coincidence, that when we looked at the location, the assistant who accompanied me, he sat down at the piano and played Schubert. I said, great, you could play Schubert. You have to play the husband or the boyfriend, and you have to play Schubert.
Thank you, Doris Dorry, director of Fukushima Mon Amour, screening at Berlinale in the Panorama section. And this is Chiara Nicoletti for Fred, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on fred.fm and smartphone apps.